privilege of interviewing Kavita. And I love Kavita. She is such a sweetheart. In fact, I should say Kavita, a.k.a. The Bride.
Oh, wow. I love you, too.
I know. I know. I really do. It's a nice way. When I call people brides, I love them. And so Kavita and I tried to do this podcast four times, trying to start it. We're cracking each other up. But I want to ask Kavita this question. When did you find the church, or how did you find the church?
Actually, I didn't. Jesse did.
Oh, it's Jesse did. Okay.
And,
thank you, Jesse.
So when we were first dating about 6 years ago, he asked me if I would come with him, and okay. I was like, sure. And we just started coming randomly, and...
Oh, so you about 6 months before... Oh, now I remember. It was about... Because you started coming around right before you got married. You were engaged?
No, about a year and a half before.
Oh, a year and a half?
So it'll be 5 years for us here in May.
Okay.
So we've been coming here about six
and a half
years.
So he found it on the internet, I assume.
I actually never asked him. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it is a fun
I think you should interview Jesse next.
Yeah, Jesse, okay. We'll just postpone this. Jesse, how'd you really find the church? Like, really, anyone would care. But anyway, so you found it, you guys came, and you've been coming here how long?
6 years.
6 years. Now, the thing is, I want to start off in this. About a month and a half ago, because I did a sermon, and the beginning of my sermon illustration, I was saying, I have a dream. And I had this dream that one day that I would never shake, that I wouldn't have this learning disability, that I would just fit in and be the pastor, that I actually can hold the communion elements and stuff like that. But that dream never materialized. But you wrote me a neat little email right after that.
I knew that was a mistake.
And so we went out to lunch, and you basically said, I have a dream too. And and I thought, oh wow, this is deep, which is good. So your dream started like when you were eight, nine years old?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe as a teenager more like it. But when you were talking during that sermon and talking about this recurring dream, I was just like, the whole time, I was like, I have a recurring dream, too. Mm-hmm. I had to write it to you what my dream is and
right.
How I interpret it and whatnot, so.
And what was your dream?
So, I dream. It's not necessarily a dream when I'm sleeping. It's
right.
Daydreaming.
And mine was, too.
That someday I won't have the burn marks on my legs.
Okay.
And it's just... It's just when vanity wins.
Right.
I really, like, that's what I dream about. I'm like, oh, someday I want to have the scars on my leg and
right.
I'll be able to wear short skirts and shorts and in the summer and
so you don't
be all girly.
Because when you told me this, I was going, yeah, I've never seen her in shorts.
Yeah.
And so what happened?
So I was playing with fireworks when I was 9.
Okay, 9 years old.
And... I got scared or something, and I backed into a bunch of candles, and my dress caught on fire.
Okay.
So a lot of my body was burnt. My mom obviously, like, put her hands in the fire and, like,
right.
The dress
so,
off
I
of
mean,
me.
So, I mean, was this a full flame? I mean, the
yeah,
dress caught on fire?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And, I mean, was your hair burned? Or?
My hair was burnt, all stuck together
really?
Over my head. It looked like a bird's nest.
Wow.
Yeah, I was...
And I assume you were screaming, too, weren't you?
I don't really remember, but I'm sure I was.
Okay.
But, yeah, it was... I was bedridden for a year. I went through a ton of skin grafts and, you know, no
okay.
school or...
Did you lose consciousness? Do you remember?
I don't think so.
Okay. So they raced you to the ambulance, right?
Yeah,
raced
like right away
hospital.
And, yeah.
Okay, did they begin to do skin grafts, or how does that work?
Well, they had to let it heal a little bit before they can do skin grafts.
Okay.
And first they tried artificial, like, skin from other people, donors and
right.
stuff. It didn't work very well. Then they started taking skin from my other leg that
okay.
wasn't burnt. And those went really well. My skin
but
started accepting it.
Was that painful, though?
I'm sure it was. You know what I do remember?
Okay.
I don't remember everything. I do remember being really, really hot.
Okay.
Like after, not like during the
right, right.
the burning, but like I used to just run hot. And it was middle of the winter, and my room in the hospital was cranked up AC. Everybody would put like snow gear on to come see me.
Okay.
Because I was just hot. That's what I remember from the hospital experience.
So when you were in the hospital for a year.
I wasn't in the hospital for a year.
Recovering.
Maybe 3 months, and then I was recovering at home, and then doctor used to do home visits.
Did you have to learn how to walk again, or did you have
No, it's interesting because they told my mom that there's a chance I may not never walk again.
Okay.
Right? And for a mom, it's the most devastating.
Oh, yeah.
And my mom is very emotional anyways, so it was pretty rough. My dad was here, and my mom was there by herself, but she has a really supportive family. Like her brother and my grandparents were there and everything. Right. So, it was pretty rough. And when I started walking, it was weird, but I was determined.
Were you made fun of as a kid? Do you remember that? Because I was. I was called the moving earthquake.
Well, I think what I did is I hid it from the world. Okay. Like, I still hide it.
Yeah.
I wear jeans.
Okay.
And, I still hide it.
Right.
And not very many people know.
Right.
But, I hid it from the world so nobody could make fun of me kind of thing.
Yeah.
10:30.
Oh, it's 10:30, by the way.
I said, I'm going to turn this off. Anyway, okay.
We probably got distracted on our seventh day.
I forgot it. Sorry. Anyway, so you could hide yours. See, for me, I couldn't hide it.
Yeah.
I couldn't hide the tremor. I tried to with putting my hands in my pockets all the time. You know, it's interesting because I think as a child, you try to fit in. You just try to say, I don't want any attention.
No, yeah, absolutely.
And so you just learn how to hide and stuff like this. So now you were born where?
In New Delhi, India.
New Delhi, India. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah.
Did pretty good.
Yeah, surprisingly.
No. Yeah, let me try to pronounce again. New Delhi, India.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so when did you move to the United States, or why did you guys move to the United States?
So my dad's been here since I was 5. He moved here for, better opportunities, whatever most people say, I guess.
Okay.
And we didn't come here until I was 17. So we came here because our dad had filed for us and all the green card paperwork, everything came through. And
17 is an impressionable age, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I would assume it was difficult. No,
it was. I did not. I mean, my whole childhood, I so wanted to be with my dad.
Right.
And by the time our number came, proper channels and whatever.
Right.
I was a teenager with friends in high school and a boyfriend. I didn't want to come here.
Yeah.
So it was rough, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm happy I'm here.
I know, and it's hard. And that's a big jump culturally, too.
Yeah.
To live. So where did you live? Did you live in the L.A. area?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so did you finish high school in India, or did you finish
in India?
Okay, so... So then I'm assuming you went to college.
Mm-hmm.
What was your dream as a child?
When I was really little, I really wanted to be a doctor.
Did you?
Do
you think that's because of your experiences in the hospital? Or
I don't know. Maybe I thought it was just cool.
Okay.
I don't know. It's hard to... I haven't really analyzed my childhood dreams, but... I really wanted to be a doctor, but then I quickly figured out when I couldn't dissect a mouse or rat or whatever they gave us in the biology class. I'm like, not doing this.
Can't do a rat, you have to do
but
a human.
But math comes really easy to me, right? So it's just one of those things. And I came here and my dad had already picked the school, had already picked the major for me, and I was like, okay, I'll try it.
Okay.
And... I mean, like I said, you throw me at anything, I'll figure it out.
Right.
It's just who I am.
Yeah.
It's worked out pretty well. I do pretty
I think so.
Well, and I enjoy
in
my
fact,
job
what do you
most
do,
days.
What do you do now?
I'm an engineer. Well, actually, I'm an engineering manager now, but...
Okay, so you drive the train at Disneyland.
Pretty much. So I work on unmanned aircrafts.
Really?
For the military. So that's what I work on.
Can you elaborate on what
So yeah, so yeah, if anybody wants to, can look up X-47B and all the aviation histories were made over the last 5 years.
And that's the one that you helped design? Or?
Yes, design, test, fly. That's why I have my flight jacket.
Flight jacket. Uh-huh. And so there was a point, I think a few years ago, that you were going to head on an aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
To watch it be tested.
Right. Okay. Yeah, because an unmanned aircraft has never taken off or landed on an aircraft carrier before.
Okay.
We were the first ones, and it was historic.
Were you nervous?
I didn't get to go. Oh, I found out 2 weeks before that I was pregnant, so they don't allow preggers on the aircraft carrier full of fuel. So I didn't get to go, but I still haven't gone because the only time you can go is about 3-4 week trip, and I don't want to lose my child.
So how did the plane do?
It was better than a manned aircraft. Okay. It landed every time on the exact same spot.
Really?
Exact same spot. And we did cats and traps, and we've done autonomous aerial refueling where we took fuel from a different aircraft during flight.
Wow.
So it's all very historic, and it was my first baby. I've worked very hard on it.
And how many years from conception to reality?
Oh, a lot of years. A lot of years. I haven't worked on it from the beginning. I used to work for Boeing before. So I came to work for Northrop about 6.5 years ago. Okay. So.
All right. So your career is like moving in a positive direction.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But let's go back to your relationships.
Okay.
And,
we have to?
No, we don't. Yeah, we don't have to. But you were like me. You were married before, and it just didn't work out. And so
I was married at 21.
21.
To someone I met in college, undergrad, and looking back, I don't know. There were a lot of things why we got married. There was a lot of, I feel like, for myself, I felt like he needed me.
Okay.
I could help him.
Okay.
That was one of the reasons I was in the relationship. It was a lot of social pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I felt
from your culture or just...
Yeah, from the culture. Okay. I was with this man, and I was expected to marry him.
Right.
And just... That was a lot of pressure on a 21-year-old.
Did you know that this wasn't going to work when you were, getting married? Or
I think I always knew that we weren't a perfect match.
Okay.
But
you were going to try and make it work?
I was going to try to make it work because he loved me and he needed me and I could help him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a good guy and...
Mm-hmm.
Blah, blah, blah.
So how long were you married for?
5 years.
5 years. When did you notice it going south? And,
you know, we always had issues, but I was in denial for the longest time until he started drinking.
Okay.
He started drinking so much that you just couldn't recognize him anymore.
Okay.
So and that's when I started to... admitted and started talking to friends.
Right.
Jesse was one of my friends that I talked to.
Right.
A couple of my other really close girlfriends, and that's when I started talking. Once I started saying things out loud, I had no choice but to get out of my denial.
Yeah.
And that's when it became real. And once I realized that I did not want to have kids with this man, I knew it was over.
That would make sense.
Yeah,
that would make sense.
It.
Like, I don't want to bring a child
into
this world with this guy.
No.
And so, would you say that he was a little emotional abusive or a lot of emotional abusive? You weren't physically abusive.
No.
Okay.
I think he was smart enough to know that I would walk out in a split second.
Okay.
But I think emotional abuse was definitely there. I was definitely afraid to walk out of the house because I knew he would be so angry.
Okay.
So
did you have like a date in your head? Like, I'm going to go?
No, it just all happened very quickly. Like, once me and my best friend stayed up till 4 a.m. making this list of what was good in my marriage, what was not good
right.
in my marriage. And once I realized I didn't want to have child with this man, that was it. I mean, I knew I was going to do this, and I did it, like, within a day or two, but it's just...
So after you made the list with your friend, within a two-day period...
That was it. It was...
So did you take off, like, during the day when he was at work?
Or... No. Okay. I told him I was... I didn't know that... So at that point, I didn't know for sure I was going down the divorce path.
Okay.
Right? I told him he needed help.
Right. For his drinking.
And... For his drinking, and he had anger issues. Right. I told him he needed help. I was going to go live with my parents until he got some help and we can talk then.
Okay.
And he was very angry, and he told me if I was using this to manipulate him to go... to AA or go to therapy, then he would divorce me before he did that.
Oh, really?
He said it to my face, and I was very sad at the moment, but he's, I mean, he went back, when I filed, I mean, he begged me to come back, he went into therapy, he did all of that. It's just, it was too late. I had realized I had to do this for myself.
It's almost, and the thing is, this is what I discovered, too, that you leave a marriage emotionally first rather than physically.
Absolutely.
And by the time it clicks in someone's head, oh my goodness, she's serious, it's too late.
It was too late.
It's too late. Emotionally, you can't go back there.
I had so much pressure from, I mean, divorce is not okay in Indian culture, right? I mean, I had so much pressure to go to marriage counseling. And I loved his family. They were very good to me.
Right.
And even they were like, can you give it a chance? Give marriage counseling a chance. I just knew it. This was not it for me. This was... If I stayed in it, I'd be trapped forever.
Right.
I just knew this was one thing I had to do for myself, for my life. And I felt selfish. Don't get me wrong. I felt selfish for some moments. Right. But some reason I felt okay that this was one thing I had to do for myself.
Because I hear a lot of people that say that, they go, if I stay in this abusive relationship, I'll die. And not physically dead, it's just emotionally, I cannot live like this anymore.
I can't tell you, Pastor Kevin, I felt so free. So free that I didn't have to babysit him. Because it was always worry, okay, he needs me. He didn't have a lot of friends. If I didn't go back, if I took a couple of days with my girlfriends, you know, there was just so much pressure that I didn't even realize I had on my shoulders.
Oh, yeah.
That when I finally was done with it, I felt so free.
Yeah. Could fly. Could fly. And so you left. Do you remember what year this was?
10.
Okay, 2010. 2010 seems like it was a year ago, but it's like 7 years ago. Not even getting old. Okay, so 2010. So then all of a sudden you decide, you know, did you get to the point where I'm just done with marriage? I'm not getting married again?
It's funny. I told both Kamal and Jesse, my two closest friends, I was like, I don't really need to marry again. I could have a baby by myself. Like, I would be like, you know, all these things I would tell them. I definitely told them, I was like, make sure my next guy is not a fixer-upper.
I don't need a project.
No, I don't need a project. He's broken. If I can live with the broken, it's okay, but I'm not fixing him.
You know, and the same thing with my first marriage. I don't know if it's... like we feel like we have to fix someone up to feel loved. I have no idea.
Probably.
Because you were saying
that. We should go see a therapist.
Yeah. This is therapy. We're not recording this. It's totally therapy. Because it's almost to the point, I remember I shouldn't have married my first wife. I mean, she was really broken. I was broken. But somehow I felt like I could fix her.
Yeah.
And the need and stuff like this.
And you know, like, if you look at from outside, I mean, why would a girl who's top of her class in engineering school marry someone who has passed drug issues and has all these anger issues?
Yeah.
I mean, you look at it and you're like, this makes no sense, right? But it's hard to explain what our emotional ties are and.
Our brokenness around her. So you had two best friends. One was a guy, that was Jesse, and one was a girl.
Mm-hmm.
What was her name?
Kamal.
Come on. Mm-hmm. And so somehow now Jesse is your husband now. Mm-hmm. So how do you go from he's been my best friend, I've unloaded all my problems to him and stuff like this, and then all of a sudden...
I personally don't think I would have jumped back into a relationship as quickly as I did if I didn't know him inside out, kind of thing. I don't know. I actually do know when it happened. One of the nights, we used to talk all the time on the phone, and one of the days, nights, we were just talking, and just something clicked in my head that the other half of my brain is in his head.
Right.
Like, we are so synced of how we
think,
how we picture things, where we want to be, and I was just like, oh my goodness, that's my soulmate. I didn't say it out loud. I said it in my head, and I freaked out.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because I'm like, that's my best friend.
Yeah.
You know, and there's always, you know, you don't want to lose your
best
friends, and it's a lot of pressure, but...
So how did that conversation take place? Like, we're going from best friend as, hey, I think you're cute.
No. Or that conversation did not take place.
The conversation didn't take place. It just kind of naturally happened. Okay, naturally happened.
Yeah.
So you and Jesse, then you started coming to our church after your dating while, dating and stuff like that, and then he proposed to you, and...
Yeah, with a dollar wrapped ring. Did I ever tell you that? Like, he made like the origami with a dollar bill with a ring, and that's how he proposed to me.
So his investment in the proposal was a dollar.
Was actually the time he did to make the ring.
Yeah, other people are doing these elaborate ones. You know, for my proposal for Jennifer, it was on a sailboat out in the ocean.
Yeah.
His was a dollar and a little.
It was a dollar ring. I don't think it was planned. Okay. We were walking Main Street, Santa Monica. It was dark, and we stopped at the steps right in front of the church on Main Street.
Oh, really?
And we were just sitting there talking, and you just popped the question.
Wow. And I had the privilege of doing a wedding.
You did?
Yes.
And you also had the privilege of screwing up our big wedding.
You know, that's what you do. Well, first of all, let's set up how I screwed it up. Because I screw up weddings a lot. Okay, when you hear that a wedding was perfect and Pastor Kevin did it, it's like, oh, wow, that's like a miracle. But yours is bad because it was on the beach, right?
Yeah.
And basically, if you listen to the podcast, it was... Hey, we're going to get married on the beach, but we're not sure exactly where on the beach, so we're all walking around. Do you remember that?
We let the photographers pick a spot.
Yeah, pick a spot. So it was kind of on a, not a hill, but anyway, where the water, it was close to the water, near rocks, I remember that. So I put my podium up, and, because I can't hold a book with a tremor, and somehow I changed the names of the vows. I can replace the names. And the name was, your husband's name is Jesse. And on my book, it said Jessica. Okay? And so when I said, will you repeat after me, I, Jessica, take you, Kavita. And when it said Jessica, I was going, I hope no one heard it. But you're Jesse. Because it was an outdoor. We didn't have microphones.
It
was a simple wedding.
Yeah.
And Jesse just goes on. He goes, Jessica? Did you say Jessica? And I'm thinking, oh, I wish I could just hide this. You know, because I was embarrassed. I mean, it's like I'm doing a gay wedding now, Jessica and Kavita. So.
Yeah, it's funny because it was really funny then, but he's rarely used it to pick on you, really, than the other way around.
Yeah.
He told me before I came here, he's like, make sure you remind him you screwed up our wedding. I was like, all right.
So, but anyway, was it recorded? I don't think.
No.
No, it's good.
No, it's just pictures.
I can totally deny it. I didn't say it.
Yeah, you just said you did it, so no.
That's true. So you've been married how long?
It'll be 5 years in May.
Okay. And you had your first baby.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when did you have?
In July 2013.
Okay. And the thing is, if you guys are listening, Jesse is not Indian.
No.
And he's, well, I know you know that. But you married a white dude.
I did.
Did you get any pushback on that?
No, my first husband was also a white dude.
Oh, was he? I didn't know that.
It's just...
Well, you're just not... You're attracted to white dudes.
That's it.
For some reason, I just thought he was Indian.
No.
Okay. So now, what's interesting, how old is your son?
3.5.
Okay. And this is what I want to talk about, because it's not been an easy area of... Because you wanted a second child.
Yeah. We still do.
Yeah, still do. But you had this injury 10 months ago.
Yeah.
What happened?
Nothing. I just woke up one day and I had a sharp pain in my right hip and I was like, uh-oh. I stretched and I popped ibuprofen and ran to work because I was late for work.
Right.
And by the end of the day, I couldn't even walk.
Okay.
And Jesse actually had to come pick me up, carry me to the car.
Really?
Yeah, it was terrible. It's been pretty rough since.
Okay. Now, usually my back goes out where I'm crawling, and within 5 days, I can stand up and walk within a week and a half. But for you, this is 10 months.
It's been long. Yeah.
It's been long. And so tell me some of the procedures you had to...
So at first, I'm not a surgery person,
right.
So I was trying to avoid it at all costs. I was just trying to do epidurals and anything that was, non-invasive.
Right.
And finally I gave in. I was like, all right, I think they're going to, because they told me I had bulging discs. I was like, all right, I guess it's been too long. It's time to look into the microdiscectomy that the doctor had mentioned earlier.
Now, what is a microdiscectomy?
When they go in and they basically cut out the bulging disc that's sticking out.
Okay.
I went in and he's like, I'm not sure that's the pain you're feeling, the surgeon, that I went to. And he did another round of tests and he said, basically my bottom two discs are bad.
Uh-huh.
He thinks the only surgical option I have is, spinal fusion.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, at your age, I don't even recommend it because the problem's just going to keep moving up your spine until you are fused all the way through and you can't move.
We can't move.
So
if they do a surgery right now, you would be fine, but 10, 15
years, I would have to do surgery on my mid back and then on my upper back in another 15
years. And then by the time you're 60 something,
I won't.
You can't walk.
I will have very less mobility, I mean, in terms of moving and whatnot. So it was pretty hard for me to hear that. And I was bawling in his office when he told me that. I just couldn't believe it that I don't have options, real options.
Because you're in your 30s, you're young.
Yeah, so I told him, I was like, but we want to have kids.
Right.
And he's like, well...
Good luck.
If you really want kids, then you should do fusion, and you'll be okay for 10, 15 years. But he's like... But he's a surgeon, you know. He doesn't look at non-invasive methods. Yeah. But it was pretty heartbreaking for me. I probably sat in the car crying for a long time.
Well, it's almost to the point, do I want a child? Yes. But I'm taking a risk. I could be crippled in 15 years.
Yeah.
So how does that...
I mean, I've finally gotten to a point where I've decided I'm not going to do a fusion.
Okay.
I'm looking at other non-invasive methods, and if it's meant to be, you know, we will have another child.
Right.
But it was pretty rough. It happened 2 days before Christmas is when I found out about this.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
And I was just like, it was pretty rough. The holidays were a little rough.
And so in the 10 months, I mean, it's hard for you to even be at church sometimes.
Yeah, because, I stand in the back a lot of times, yeah.
Because the sitting on a chair for
it has pretty much changed my life in every way. I don't travel for work. I don't travel anywhere because I can't sit on an airplane.
Yeah.
Anywhere we have to go far, we have to make several stops.
Right.
Pull over from the freeway and stop, and I walk around the car and... I haven't picked up Rishab since my injury happened.
So Rishab is your son. So you haven't picked up your
child
in 10 months.
Nope. I mean, he at first it was rough, but now he's used to it. He comes, lays on top of me rather than me picking him up.
Right.
But it's rough.
Of course.
In the beginning, he used to cry for me to pick him up, and it was pretty hard.
Oh.
Yes, it's been terrible.
Yeah, do you get to the point, because I remember you calling and saying, look, I'm having a fusion done. And actually, she's standing up right now because her back's hurting.
Well, you reminded me about it.
I'm sorry. That's what we're talking about. So you got this shot, and you were asking for prayer because you were hoping this shot would take the pain away. It was, what type of shot
was it? It was actually diagnostics, and since it was diagnostics, they weren't going to sedate me.
Okay.
And I don't like ginormous needles going in my spine. That just sounds awful.
Yeah.
So I was really scared. So we did the diagnostics. It showed some
improvement.
It showed that there's chance this will actually help. I was supposed to do that real one last Monday, but right. I got sick. So
okay.
They said, nope, with fever, you can't do that.
Oh, you can't do it.
So now I have to wait.
Okay. So let me ask a $1 million question. I don't know if it's a $1 million question, but we've been praying about certain situations and stuff like that. And obviously, the way that we were praying for complete healing upon your back so you can pick up your son, that you can be mobile, that you can have a child, but it just seems like it's not going the progress you would like to see it.
Yeah, and it's definitely not moving at the pace I would like it to.
Yeah.
So I've definitely improved. I mean, I'm moving better. I feel stronger. I've been
right.
doing PT for several months now, so I'm definitely getting better. It's just so slow. And I've read about it. If you don't do fusion, you just let it heal. It takes about a couple of years, so
okay.
I'm probably close
halfway
to a year, halfway
it.
Through. So.
Oh, that's the worst part.
Yeah.
Do you get mad at God?
No. Sometimes.
And how is that manifested? Do you go? I ain't talking.
I think it's more like pity. I have pity parties sometimes.
Okay.
I lay there in bed and I'm like, I went through this as childhood.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know,
With the burning and
yeah. you know, I think I've paid my dues. I'm done. Like, this
yeah.
is, what is this going on?
Yeah.
So I get mad sometimes and I cry. I have pity parties and then I get perspectives
right.
in life and
but,
feel better.
But one of the cool things too is I would love to give a shout out to Jesse, who likes to make fun of me. But Jesse's been an incredible support to you.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
And so.
And my entire family, his parents, my parents.
Right.
I mean, I don't think I could continue to work full time with this injury.
Right.
And have a clean enough house and take care of, you know, my child if
yeah.
I didn't have such a supportive team, really.
Yeah. So while we wind this down, let me ask you this. As a child, 9-year-old child, you went through totally suffering and pain, right? I mean, for a year of rehab, stuff like that, and hiding this burn on your leg. Have you ever shared it publicly?
I mean, I feel like last few years I've been sharing more with friends when
okay.
they ask me, why don't you do this? And I'm like, oh, I can't. I have burns on my leg.
Right.
So I feel a little bit more open about
right.
it. I'm not sure why.
Well, it's interesting because for me, when I go to the doctor or the dentist and they go, can you fill this out? I usually like come and pick it up 2 days before and then have Jennifer
mm-hmm.
fill it out because I don't want to tell them.
Yeah.
But now I'm getting to the point and say, I have Parkinson's, I have tremors, can you fill it out?
Yeah.
And they do it.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I'm 54 years old. Why am I just deciding to do this now?
Yeah.
It would have made my life much easier. I think it's where we're accepting it
yeah.
more.
Yeah, I definitely feel that I'm starting to accept it enough
to let
yeah.
it be known.
Yeah.
And so you went through this, and you went through a difficult marriage, and then all of a sudden your back just snapped out one day and all this. What is one of the lessons that you could say, this is what I'm learning, this is what I'm trying to figure out? Or is it...
All right, folks, we're done here.
or maybe it's not a lesson. Maybe it's just life.
So we talked about a lot of things that went wrong
right.
in my life, right? But there are also a lot of good things in my life.
Okay.
I mean, just talk about second chances in life. Jesse in my life. I mean,
right.
marrying your best friend. I mean, can't have anything better than
no.
that. You know, my family, so supportive.
Yeah.
The fact that I have a very able mind that I can figure out some very complex things and feel good about it.
Right.
I have a good career. I mean, so there are lots of, I have a beautiful child. I can't, even if I can't have, I have a beautiful, very sharp child, loving child who's a... was also a brat.
Okay, where do you get that one from?
So I think that's what I... So I do have pity parties, but I also feel like I'm growing enough to see the good things in my life.
Yeah.
And some of those good things may not have happened if I didn't go through the bad. That's, I feel like I would have never appreciated Jesse if he and I had gotten together in college.
Right.
Not as much as I do now. Right. I went through some... hard things with my ex.
Right.
That's why I'm like, Jesse's such a great dad. Yeah. You know, I can appreciate
things. I totally get that.
And I think that's how I get through it. And I don't know why I'm hurting with my back right now. There's got to be some reason.
Right.
That's the only way I sometimes, you know, tell myself. But you know, maybe it's... I don't know. Maybe it's the way we're testing our marriage. You know, the whole time Jesse and I have been married, it's all been a fun ride.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do pretty well, like, it, you know, career-wise. So we have
means. You guys are
a cute couple. Thank you. We go dancing, and, you know, it's always been fun. We traveled all over the place, and we haven't been able to do that much. I'm learning to, you know, depend on him more. So maybe it's just, it's opening up different areas. That
it's interesting because you told me in a conversation a couple of weeks ago that you feel.
What did I say now?
I know, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell her on the podcast too. That you feel closer to Jesse and more intimate with Jesse when you dance.
I do.
And that is interesting because I've never heard a couple say that.
Yeah.
And so tell us about that too.
So it's funny because, like,
because you can dance right now, right? With the back?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We, a little bit, not much, but yeah, the, we started taking dance lessons when we first sort of started dating, and we were still fighting it. I mean, dating your best friend's a little, you know, unnerving and whatnot, and we started taking these dance lessons. I talked him into it, and we both loved this teacher, and it just... When we would dance, I mean, dancing, ballroom dancing is flirtatious. You're touching, you're laughing, you're twirling. And we just had so much fun, and we felt so connected. And our teacher used to come over and say all the time, he's like, you guys are so in love. You're stinking cute. Get out of here. I mean, he used to say all these things. And it still is. I mean, I forced us to say, hey, I can't dance much, but let's go to our once-a-month dancing thing. A couple of months ago, we went... And we just, when we dance, it's just like, it doesn't matter what's going on outside the world.
Yeah.
It's just us. And we're still in love. And, you know, it's so cool. Reminds us very quickly.
And the thing is, you invited Ryan and Robin dancing.
Yeah.
Too.
They went a couple of months ago, actually.
That's cool. And Ryan can't dance, right?
They're going to pick it up. I mean, I didn't know any of this stuff before I took lessons. So they have the rhythm. That's all that matters.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just thought it was very fascinating to hear that if there's any tension between us, we just dance. And
we do dance.
And
we dance sometimes without music.
Yeah.
On the streets.
Well, I remember your first apartment.
You had a dance floor
in your apartment.
Yes.
Which is interesting because they had a dance floor in their apartment and they lived on a second story.
Yeah. That's true. You cannot dance on carpet, okay? Well, an entire apartment was carpet, so the only way we could dance is put a floor on it.
Before the child, when you went to visit their apartment, and we're right in the living room, there's a dance floor. And one of the bedrooms is this man cave of TV screens and all these electronic games and Nintendos or whatever they are.
Yeah.
And then you had a big barbecue that overlooked.
And the pit, fire pit.
Yeah,
overlooked the water.
Apartment.
It was pretty nice.
So, anyway, now you guys settled, bought a home. Beautiful home, too.
I know. Growing up is overrated. Get rid of the apartment, get a home, with a yard for the child. Yeah, you know, it's just like...
So, but anyway, well, thank you for joining. Thank you for being part of this podcast. And so, if you enjoyed this podcast and you see Kavita at church on Sunday, and she's standing in the back of the church, don't lift her up. Don't give her a hug. Well, no, you like hugs. You can hug. Don't dance with her. See, I get you to dance with her, too. But anyway, I would really encourage you to pray for Kavita and her back, because I really want to see a miracle in her life. I want to see her healed. And so that one day that I can dedicate or baptize their second child, that's one of my prayers that that will happen. If you enjoyed this podcast, please encourage other people to listen to the podcast. Remember, our services are at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. Please join us every Sunday. And also remember, every day is a gift from God, and use it wisely. God bless, and I'll talk to you, and I'll see you next week. God bless.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We did a good job.
Did we? We laughed a lot.